Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. This week, Spotify tells investors everything's fine, honest. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello there.
As ever, we are going to take a look back at some of the biggest and most interesting music industry news stories of the last week. A week when, leading on from last week's episode, more than 50 music industry organisations called on UK Collecting Society PRS to reverse its decision to cut its annual donation to the PRS Foundation by 60%. That cut, these organisations said in an open letter to the Collecting Society, threatens the future of the UK music industry and could jeopardise recent improvements in the representation of women and minorities within it.
Now, we don't have to explain any of the background here, because if we did, we would literally be repeating last week's set list. So if you don't know what...
And I'm not saying that's not something we do, but I mean, not quite so quickly.
Usually we leave it a couple of weeks before we basically talk about the same story for a second time. So go back and listen to last week's set list if you want to know what this is about. But yeah, since we recorded the last edition, this open letter was published with lots of organisations that support artists and songwriters, and particularly early career and grassroots and niche talent around the UK, many of which actually receive funding from PRS Foundation in one way or another. And they were all supporting what last week was mainly the Featured Artist Coalition, wasn't it, who had launched their petition. That's why we were talking about it last week. So lots of organisations, but what organisations, Andy Malt?
Well, I mean, I'm not going to list all 50, but there was the Britain Sinfonia, Sound and Music, Non-Classical, Future Bubblers, the Cheltenham Festivals, Opera North, Jazz Refreshed, Red Note Ensemble, Oh Yeah Ireland, Focus Wales, Punch Records, South Asian Arts, Brighter Sound, UD Music, the Jazz Promotion Network, British Underground, and the Black Music Coalition among those 50 organisations.
Yeah, I mean, listening to you reading them out there, it felt like you did 62, but that actually was only a portion of the people who signed this open letter. So yeah, we'll wait to see whether or not PRS does indeed have a rethink on its funding for the PRS Foundation, because the cut isn't actually due to kick in until 2024, so there is still time, but we will see. But as we say, and we can't stress this enough, particularly for those of you thinking, oh, why are you talking about the same story again? Well, you should know that we're not here to talk about this story this week.
Yeah, come on, you know the format by now. Although, we're going to change the format this week because later on, nothing, we're going to talk about one story this week because there's just so much to say about it. And that is that last week, Spotify held an event called Investor Day, which sounds exciting. And throughout that day, various Spotify execs went around telling investors that everything at Spotify is just great. There's going to be a lot more money. There's going to be a lot more users. And Spotify is going to take over everything. One of those people who was speaking was CEO Daniel Ek. And he told investors that Spotify's strategy in recent years to become an audio platform rather than just a music platform will ultimately result in a business that can generate $100 billion in revenue annually and achieve a 40% gross margin and a 20% operating margin. And, you know, some of these investors might even have believed that.
I'm sure they believed every single word Daniel Ek said, because, I mean, why wouldn't you? Although, I suppose, interesting to consider for a moment, why did Spotify stage this event aimed at its investors specifically? Because I guess in the last couple of years, Spotify have done a number of events more aimed at sort of the music community and the creator community, where they were bragging about all the new tools and services they were adding, and in a way, usually slightly indirectly responding to some of the criticism of Spotify in the music community and the wider creator community. But this event, yeah, very much aimed at investors and the investment community, which Spotify did a lot of schmoozing and talking to just over 4 years ago when it was preparing to list on the New York Stock Exchange. And obviously, as a publicly listed company, it does its quarterly financial report for investors. But you sort of felt this day was being staged because, well, there is a little bit of a narrative going on at the moment in the investment community that the subscription streaming business, so not just Spotify, but everybody involved in subscription streaming, is facing a challenging couple of years ahead for various reasons. A big one being that all of the Spotify type services, but not just music, the video services and all of the other on-demand content services that are out there, all benefited from the pandemic, because of course there was that COVID-caused increase in home entertainment consumption. So lots of services saw a spike in signups and subscriptions during that period, with COVID, certainly COVID lockdowns and COVID regulations sort of in the past now. That surge is ending. Meanwhile, we have the cost of living crisis and recession and all sorts of economic woes in many countries around the world, plus an ever-increasingly competitive marketplace with more companies launching services, lots of the traditional media and film and TV companies entering the video-on-demand market, plus, of course, the ever-mighty TikTok along with Instagram and YouTube and all of those services all competing for consumption, for viewers, for listening hours and viewing hours, even if they all have different models in terms of how they make money. So there is this narrative that companies like Spotify are in a little bit of a tricky position at the moment. And it was interesting, wasn't it? At the end of the first quarter, when the big services were all issuing their financial statements, Spotify actually was reporting growth, despite those challenges, despite the war in Ukraine forcing them to shut down the Russian side of their business. Actually, Spotify continued to add users and have more subscribers and premium subscribers in the first quarter of this year. Nevertheless, as Spotify released all those stats, its share price, which has been declining for about a year now, went down further and actually dropped below $100 per share for the first time since the company listed on the New York Stock Exchange. And you sort of felt that Netflix's quarterly report for the first quarter of this year, where Netflix revealed that it had lost some subscribers in the first quarter, was having as big an impact on Spotify's share price than Spotify's own figures. Despite Daniel Ek, back when he announced those quarterly figures, desperately trying to distinguish Netflix from Spotify and basically saying, okay, yes, the Netflixes of this world are in a difficult position because all the movie studios have launched rival services. But although there are some similarities between Spotify and Netflix, there's also lots of differences. And he was basically saying to his investors, we're completely different to Netflix. We're not facing all the challenges that Netflix are presenting. And actually also last week, a big US bank analyst there basically backed Daniel Ek up in saying, don't assume Spotify and Netflix are like-for-like businesses. Yes, there are some challenges they both face, but there are also a number of differences, which means Spotify is in a better position than Netflix and sort of the video on demand services. So it's not just Daniel Ek saying that. Analysts are saying it as well. But you sort of felt that one of the reasons for doing this investor day was to get the investor community in the room and say, yeah, we know there's this narrative about we and everybody in the on-demand premium streaming space are facing these challenges. Yes, we know we're a company that keeps growing, but it doesn't really grow its profits. It grows its user numbers and it grows its revenues, but it doesn't really grow profits. We know that that's causing concern amongst part of the investment community. But trust us, we know what we're doing. We're not in the terrible, challenging space that a Netflix is. Actually, we're at the start of something magnificent. We're all going to make lots of money. That was kind of the narrative of the day. And of course, as regular listeners to Setlist will know, we own a Spotify share. We have a Spotify share, the CMU Spotify share. We bought it when the company listed back in 2018 for $155.17.
As of recording, and you've already said we're away off that now.
Well, it has increased a bit since the dropping below $100 after the last quarterly report. But as we record this, that share is worth $111.93. So we're still making a loss on the deal. So we're supportive of this. We want the investment community to get excited about Spotify again so the share price spikes and maybe we can sell it. And well, we were trying to
We want our nice dinner.
Exactly. That's what we were aiming for, weren't we? $60 so me and Andy can go out for a nice dinner. That's what we need. So we need the share price to get back up to, what would it be? $220 would do it for us. So we thought we'd do our bit by running through all of the reasons why Daniel Ek and his team think that Spotify actually is fine and it's just going to grow and it's going to make loads of money and nobody should be worried.
I don't know how nice a dinner you can buy for $60, but are we putting the whole share price in? Is it a $220 dinner? Is
that well, I was kind of thinking of the profit. So you need it to go up to, what, $300? Would that do it for you?
Yeah. I mean, it depends where we're going.
Well, let's see if we think that what Spotify told his investors and the wider investment community last week will do that.
Yeah, and so in his speech, Ek did start off by acknowledging some of what you said. He told the investors that there were possibly some people there who thought that Spotify is a bad business, or at least a business with bad margins for the foreseeable future. And others may even think that the audio market is limited and perhaps not that significant. But, he went on, he didn't leave it there, all of those people are wrong. He said, I believe we have a great product and importantly, our business is doing really well. But what's even more, we're really investing in building a fantastic multi-sided platform that has all the ingredients to become one of the truly unique creative platforms in the world. And based on what we see, we are accelerating our moves to seize that opportunity in the near term. And the value creation opportunity is very high. That was how he said it.
Exactly like that.
There's a video. You can go back and watch it. I copied his intonation perfectly. He then went on and reviewed how the Spotify business has evolved in the 4 years since it listed on the New York Stock Exchange, saying that the core foundations of the business haven't changed, those being that Spotify is a service that aims to be available on as many devices as possible, which offers a free tier that hooks in users and then tries to upsell them and retains those users by offering the best available personalized recommendation and curation tools. However, he went on, despite those core foundations being the same, the company's commercial ambitions and objectives have evolved considerably since 2018. So for starters, while the sale of premium subscriptions remains by far the biggest revenue generator for Spotify, he said that there's also been a focus on growing the company's two other revenue streams, which are advertising sales and its what it calls marketplace products, so the provision of services to creators. And it's by growing all three of those revenue streams that Spotify will ultimately reach the 30 to 35% profit margin targets that it's previously set itself. Of course, though, the biggest evolution at Spotify over the last 4 years is podcasts. The podcast business has become increasingly important for Spotify. It's become a much, much bigger focus for the company over the last 4 years, and that's part of its push to become an audio platform rather than just a music platform. Although, I mean, he did acknowledge that in the big push into podcasting, in the short term at least, there has been a negative impact on Spotify's profitability.
Yeah, so that evolution of Spotify from being predominantly a music service to being an audio service, which at the moment basically means music and podcasts, although as we will see, there are other audio products which are becoming important to Spotify as well. But to date, it has been around podcasting. And of course, we know in the music community, some people have been critical or at least nervous of that shift from just being a music service to being an audio service. Certainly, some people in the music community have got pissed off when they've seen Spotify splashing the cash on signing up podcasters to create exclusive content for Spotify, while at the same time going to the Copyright Royalty Board in the US and trying to get the royalties that are paid to songwriters and music publishers down. So there has been criticism of the shift from being music to audio in the music community, but some in the investment community as well, although possibly recognizing why Daniel Ek and Spotify decided to diversify. Yeah, that point that Daniel Ek made, which is on the music side, actually, the profit margin is slowly growing. And as more subscribers come in and with that marketplace, so they're also selling services to the music industry as well as paying money to the music industry, the music side is becoming more profitable. Meanwhile, podcasting at the moment is just a massive expense because they're buying up all these podcasting companies and they're paying all this money to podcasters. But his point was that big picture, long term, yes, it's meaning that the company in the short term isn't growing its profit margins, isn't becoming profitable in maybe the way some investors hoped that it would. But if people just stick around long enough, the rewards are down the line.
Yeah, so Eck continued his speech by saying that in 2018, our company was all about music. And when you isolate music, thanks to our marketplace products, its gross margin has been steadily climbing. And we are performing much better than you probably suspect, roughly 28.5%, which is significant progress in reaching our 30 to 35% long-term goal. What's been dragging it down, as we said, is the move into podcasting. But he reminded his investors that we saw the potential to be much more than just a music company. By leveraging what we've learned and all the technology we've built in music across other verticals, our ambitions became much bigger. And here's where those investments have taken us. We are now the world's largest audio streaming platform, but the prize we are going after is actually much greater. And as a consequence, the total addressable market is gigantic. Thanks to numerous investments in podcasting, he said, we are now the number one platform that podcast listeners use the most in numerous markets around the world, including in the US. In just 3 years, we've not only become a leading platform for creators and listeners, but we've expanded the very format of podcasting itself.
I think taking set
list. He didn't laugh when he said that.
Taking set list on surely is what expanded the format of podcasting itself. And well, we did that. He didn't do that. We should be getting the kudos.
That's
there.
All us.
All down to us. He then went on to say that, okay, today podcasting for Spotify is unprofitable. They're not really making much money out of it, despite spending all of that money. But, and this is a key point, and the reason why they pushed beyond music, is he said, we believe that podcasting has a 40 to 50% gross margin potential. And I guess that was the thing. Although on the music side, they are increasing their profit margin, partly because of the marketplace, but also because every few years, their licensing deals with the music publishers and the record labels and the collecting societies come up for renewal. And they negotiate, particularly on the recording side, slightly better deals, which increases their margins because you get that point where the labels need Spotify more than Spotify need labels. So they are growing the music side of the business. But because of the cost of licensing the content, even if you can get those costs down a little bit and you remove some of the extra costs from advances and minimum guarantees and things like that, there was always going to be a cap on how profitable they could make the music side of the business, because there is almost certainly a point at which they will not be able to negotiate down the labels and the publishers, etc. Meanwhile, the marketplace, while an opportunity, is not that big an opportunity. So I think, you know, his point was, okay, podcasting for us at the moment is losing us money, but in the future, not only is it going to make us money, it's going to have this really impressive profit margin, which will help us get the overall company profit margin up to that 35%, was what he was saying to his investors. You can decide whether or not you believe that. Even if you're not an investor, you know, you don't have to be an investor in the company to have an opinion on this. But as I alluded to earlier, let's not forget, Spotify is not a music and podcasting platform. It is an audio platform, and there is more diversification underway.
Yes. So he went on, what our successes in music and podcasting have clearly demonstrated is that we have built a powerful machine and solid infrastructure that enables us to go after new verticals, and we are not waiting around. So he went on, several months ago, we announced the agreement to acquire Findaway, a global leader in audiobook distribution. And while we're still waiting for this deal to close, we believe that audiobooks in their many different forms will be a massive opportunity. Today, the global size of the book market is estimated to be around $140 billion. That's inclusive of printed books, ebooks, and audiobooks, with audiobooks only having about a 6 to 7% market share. But when you look at the most penetrated audiobook markets, it's actually closer to 50% of the market, he continued. So call that an annual opportunity of $70 billion for us to expand and eventually compete for. And just as we've done in podcasting, expect us to play to win. While it's still early, we expect audiobooks to also have healthy margins above 40%.
So look at that, another audio product, which is ultimately going to be more profitable for Spotify than music, even if it's going to involve spending an awful lot of money. I mean, presumably. Whereas with podcasting, I guess Apple was the big player that they were taking on in that space. And, you know, as he has said, they've done so with a considerable amount of success, really. But I mean, I'm assuming in the audiobook space, Amazon is presumably going to be the big competitor to compete with.
Yeah, Amazon's got it. Yeah, Amazon's kind of the, I guess the I mean, they were quite aggressive in growing their audiobooks business, weren't they? And they're probably the leader in that. I mean, Apple has its own audiobooks store, so the Apple is a competitor there. I don't really know who else operates in audiobooks. I mean, as he says, in a lot of places, audiobooks aren't actually that big a portion of the overall book market. So in many countries, it's going to be all to play for.
My mum certainly buys all her audiobooks from Amazon. So maybe as a Spotify shareholder, I could consult her and ask her what would persuade her to switch her audiobook allegiances to Spotify and feed that back to Daniel. But let's stress this. Yes, audiobooks are next on the agenda for Spotify world domination, but they're not stopping at audiobooks.
No, so Daniel Ek said, we see the opportunity to continue to imagine and explore new verticals. I wish he'd stop saying verticals.
It is a terrible term, isn't it?
New verticals across our platform within audio, but also beyond. And while we aren't ready yet to share the verticals that will come next.
Shall we go with the word stuff? Shall we go back and edit every time we've said the word verticals? Shall we edit in the word stuff?
And while we aren't ready yet to share the stuff that will come next, I don't think it's hard to imagine how we will deploy this proven playbook against them, ultimately winning market share and innovating to expand the categories we go after. Is he talking about video again? Because, I mean, they've messed that up before, haven't they?
They have. They
went after it and they messed it up quite badly.
Yeah, maybe they're not going to go for another video play. Maybe they're thinking non-fungible tokens. I mean, that would be another thing for them to go after, wouldn't it? That's beyond audio. I mean, I know an NFT can be linked to audio, but not generally. Anyway, he then concluded that the opportunity out there, this is all of the opportunities, all of the stuff they may do down the line, the opportunity is massive, and I continue to believe that it is ours. So that's a Spotify team and all of the Spotify investors, including us here at CMU with our single share. It's ours to win. It's ours to win, Andy. It's very exciting.
I'm excited.
From everything I see, this is still Daniel Ek speaking here, not me. I believe that over the next decade, we will become a company, and here are the killer stats for everybody. We will become a company that can generate $100 billion in revenue annually, and that we can achieve, or you've already said this, haven't you, the 40% gross margin and 20% operating margin. Oh, I thought we'd got some bold new stats for you here, but it turns out Andy had ruined it by putting that at the start. And I know, this is still Daniel Ek speaking, in case you wondered, and I know it seems challenging to put all this into a financial model, because frankly, this type of company has never existed before, but that is exactly my point. The businesses that have never existed before are always the most valuable to have invested in over the long term. Ah, we're going to get our $300 for our share and we're going to have a really nice dinner.
400.
You're going for 400 now. Where are we going
for dinner?
I'm getting
a very old bottle of wine.
That's no use for me. I don't drink. Can I have oranges flown in from somewhere exotic and a nice glass of orange juice? The businesses, oh, I'm repeating myself now, but it doesn't matter. The businesses that never existed before are always the most valuable to have invested in over the long term. And this is the Spotify machine. I don't know what he means, this is. This is the Spotify machine. I may be, you know, this may be me screwing up what he said, or maybe his script didn't really make sense. I don't know. Anyway, and this is the Spotify machine, a unique, highly scalable machine that enables a unique platform. So that was what Daniel Ek had to say to his investors. But we should stress, it wasn't just Daniel. He allowed some other Spotify people to come and say some things. And so although we're not going to go into as much detail with all of them, you'll be pleased to hear, otherwise this will be a very long podcast indeed. But we've pulled some other things that were said elsewhere on Spotify Investors Day that we thought were a little bit interesting.
Yes, I mean, I guess, you know, Daniel Ek did the big overview and then other people from around the business drilled down more deeply into kind of the different bits of the business. So we got people talking about music and advertising and audiobooks and podcasting, a lot of podcasting, and how they were going to achieve all this amazing stuff and all this money and profit. And
to the setlist listeners, most of whom I assume work in the music industry, there was a section on music.
Yeah, they did talk about it a little bit.
A little bit on music. But another thing that they talked about...
I mean, in fact, head of music product Charlie Hellman told the audience that first and foremost, Spotify is a music company. Sort of going against everything that Daniel Ek had just said.
I'm pretty sure he was quite clear that it wasn't a music company anymore. But I'm sure that our listeners who work in the music industry will like to know that at least somebody at Spotify thinks that Spotify is a music company.
Yes. So after he'd contradicted everything his boss had said, he went on, all of our music team's strategies ladder up to two primary... ladder up?
Well, if you've got all those verticals around, you've got a ladder up.
I suppose you're going to need some ladders.
Yeah.
Ladder up to two primary goals, making a unique and superior music experience for fans and creating a more open and valuable ecosystem for artists.
Now, they didn't say a huge amount about the music side of the business. They bragged a little bit about their teams and their abilities. But we did think it was interesting that two things they did hone in on was, first of all, they talked up Discovery Mode, which regular listeners of Setlist will remember is that scheme they've been piloting where an artist...
Controversial scheme.
where artists and labels can inform the Spotify algorithm and push priority tracks into the feeds of relevant listeners, but in return for accepting a lower royalty on any streams that the algorithm then generates, has been a little bit controversial within the music community. But clearly Spotify are still pushing on with it, insisting that it's delivering the goods for all the people involved in the pilot. I mean, that's true. I know some labels and artists who have been involved in the pilot, and they all agree it is definitely working for them. They are seeing their streams increase when they use Discovery Mode, which means that even though they're getting a lower royalty rate on each individual stream, they're making more money overall. Although a few of the people involved in the pilot have said to me that they're still not convinced it's going to work once it's available to everybody, which is one of the issues that people have raised. But nevertheless, they were still bigging it up to their investors, which means that they're not planning on the drop that. And also, interestingly, they talked about how Spotify is helping artists make money beyond the streaming royalties that they earn directly.
Yeah, they talked up how, you know, the integrating of ticket listings, so you can sell concert tickets through your Spotify profile, and also the ability to sell merch, vinyl, other things direct to fans from your Spotify artist page. And they said, we've continued to make great progress with our Fans First program, which uses Spotify data to identify and reward the most passionate fans with exclusive offers like advanced access to concert tickets, exclusive merchandise, or invite-only events. To date, the program has generated more than $300 million in revenue for the music industry. So Charlie Hellman said here, as we diversify revenue streams for artists and identify the best ways to increase spending from a user base that is on its way to 1 billion, we will further enrich artists even outside of their rapidly growing streaming royalties and deliver margin impact for Spotify. So it's good for everyone.
As you said, it's always felt that quite a lot of Spotify's dabblings in those other tools to help artists make money have been a little bit sort of token gesture.
Really shit. Well, their merch stuff is awful. I don't, like, they relaunched it and it was like, we've relaunched it. It's like, no, you've just changed the platform you take it through. It's still rubbish. It's still right at the bottom where no one's ever going to see it.
But I don't know if that's
rubbish.
Partly because to date, a lot of that will help yourself some tickets, will help yourself some merch. Isn't about Spotify getting into ticketing and merch. It's about placating artists who are possibly still grumbling about the fact that they don't get as good a payout from Spotify directly as they would like. Whereas you do feel that if Spotify actually gets involved in some of the director fan elements, and I think as director fan becomes increasingly about selling digital content and digital experiences rather than tickets and merch, and if they can get rid of the Apple tax and having
to... Well, I suppose that's the big thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Having to pay a chunk of any money on a digital sale through the app to Apple and Google. I mean, obviously, they have done a deal with Google around Android, which might help. And actually, Daniel Ek did mention that elsewhere in his speech. But I think if they can get into director fan properly by offering digital content, digital experiences through the app without having to hand over a big chunk of the money to Google and Apple, then Spotify itself starts to make some money and they can help with that profit margin that obviously when they're talking to investors, they're very keen to focus on. So I think that might be when we start to see that really take off. But interesting that despite Andy Malt not being very impressed with their dabblings in that space, they were very keen to tell their investors about all of that work in the context of music.
I mean, they were very keen to tell their investors a lot of things, which I have opinions on, both as an investor and a person. But maybe we'll get to that after we've gone through all these quotes.
Interestingly, when Dawn Ostroff, who is Chief Content and Advertising Business Officer, came on the stage to talk to investors, so obviously putting the spotlight on the advertising side of the business, everything went back onto podcasting, pretty much.
Yeah.
And she, I suppose, did explain why Spotify spending money on exclusive podcasts and exclusive programs, both in terms of the studios it has bought that create programs, and then obviously the exclusive deals they've done with the Joe Rogans of this world, basically saying that that exclusive content has been important to grow the podcast side of the business, to turn more of the music listeners into being podcast listeners as well. And with that, more ad sales and brand deals are being done, which is allowing both the podcast side of the business to bring in revenue and the ad side of the Spotify business, which has always seemed like a little bit of a sideline, to become a bigger revenue generator.
So she said that to date, Spotify has committed more than $1 billion to podcasting in order to grow the podcast audience and transform the industry. And that investment brings with it a significant long-term upside. So she said that in 2021, they generated close to €200 million in podcast revenue, and they expect to increase that greatly in 2022 and going forward, and ultimately see podcasting as being a multi-billion euro business for Spotify. And thinking about the podcasting industry as a whole, before Spotify entered podcasting in 2018, they reckon the annual ad spend in the US was approximately $480 million. And it was projected at that time to hit $1.1 billion in 2022. But now, she said, podcasting is expected to exceed $2.1 billion in 2022, almost double those initial predictions, and over 300% growth since 2018. And what's more, she reckons the market is expected to double by 2024 and reach $4.2 billion. So that's why they're talking, you know, podcasting being such a massive opportunity and an area to build their advertising business, which music has not proven to be that lucrative on that side. You know, the ad-funded side of music is to try to upsell premium subscriptions, whereas in podcasting, they see it as the big revenue generator.
Elsewhere, Spotify's chief R&D officer, Gustav Soderstrom, talked about the personalization and curation side of Spotify, remembering, as I'm sure you all do from way back in this edition of Setlist, that Daniel Ek talked about that as one of the foundations of Spotify from the start. It's all about curation, it's all about discovery. And both Daniel Ek and some other people were keen to talk about how that personalization and recommendation engine can be used across these different strands. So it definitely makes sense to have music and podcasts and audiobooks side by side, because then as a consumer, you can have recommendations which understand what you like in music, what you like in podcasts, what you like in audiobooks, and apparently all of that data can be cross-referenced to make this personalization all the better. And it's all about personalization. And it's worth noting, I mentioned how last week analysts at a US investment bank were saying that investors who are down on Netflix shouldn't automatically be down on Spotify. And they did talk about the importance of the recommendation side of Spotify and why, whereas in the video on demand space, where really you're not expecting Netflix or Amazon Prime or Disney Plus to recommend you shows, which means that one month you might go to Netflix because you want to watch Stranger Things, and then the next month Disney has some new program you want to watch, so you cancel your Netflix.
Pistol.
Yeah, why not? Yeah. The Sex Pistols drama thing, which is divided opinion on my social feeds. But maybe you cancel your Netflix subscription because you're sick to death of listening to Kate Bush music and you don't want to watch Stranger Things anymore, and you want to go and watch Pistol on Disney Plus. Whereas with Spotify, the analysts at this US bank were saying last week, because Spotify understands who you are and knows what music to recommend you, you don't want to move, because if you move, you lose the recommendations. And basically, the chief R&D officer of Spotify was saying that investments in this space allow for the personalization engine to get better and better as new formats are added, like podcasts and audiobooks, ultimately giving us a better understanding of every user and how we recommend to them. To the large extent, the value of a service like Spotify is directly related to how much a consumer feels like the service helps them to discover new things, said Spotify's chief R&D officer.
Well, I mean, I think all of this stuff sounds very exciting and makes Spotify sound shiny and great and, you know, a thing to invest all of your money in. And it all, I mean, that all only really works if you don't use Spotify. Because I think that all of, like, stuffing Spotify full of all this stuff has made Spotify worse and worse and worse as an app. I've stopped using Spotify. I cancelled my subscription a couple of months ago. It was one of those multi-user subscriptions that Daniel Ek actually did talk up in his speech as well. So I was paying more than the $9.99 a month for it. But I've cancelled it because I just hate using Spotify. I think it's a mediocre podcast app with an increasingly dated and clunky music streaming service attached to it. And I think adding audiobooks to it will just make it even more crap. They've done some design things recently that are rubbish. I hate it. So despite being an investor, I do not use Spotify anymore because I don't think it's good. And I think that everything they've said in this investor speech or investor speeches are not talking about the reality of Spotify and using Spotify.
To bring some balance, and as a Spotify investor, I have some, you know, interest here. I still use Spotify. I still quite like it. I've never used Spotify for podcasts. I will not use Spotify for audiobooks. I just use it for music. I mainly use it through my smart speaker, so I only look at the app relatively occasionally. And I think it's fine. So there you go. You can decide who to believe. You can believe me, Spotify's fine. Or you can believe Andy Malt, Spotify's bullshit, they've ruined it with all the podcast nonsense. Or you can believe Daniel Ek, Spotify is the best business to invest in. It's going to own audio. You'll make loads of money by buying some shares. So yeah, take your own decision on which of those you prefer to believe. Of course, if you are listening to this through Spotify, then presumably you are a Spotify user and there must be a reason for that. Or maybe the reason is you've just not thought about going to listen to Setlist on another platform. Where else can you listen to Setlist, Andy Malt?
Anywhere, any podcast app. They're all there. There are much better ones out there than Spotify, which is a rubbish podcast app.
Apple, Amazon, what else? Whatever.
Loads of like standalone podcast apps. Downcast, that's one. What's that? There's that other one I used to use. I can't remember the name of. There's another one I used to use. I also can't remember the name of it. It begins with C.
You're doing a really good job of educating people about where they can listen to this podcast other than Spotify.
There's loads of them. There's links to go and listen on
Deezer. We're on Deezer.
We are on Deezer, yes.
If you wanted to.
I've never used Deezer's podcast playing functionality. But I guarantee if you've come to podcasting through Spotify, which, I mean, what Spotify suggests is true, for some people, the only place they've ever engaged with podcasts is on Spotify. And I assure you, Spotify is the absolute worst podcast player that you could possibly use. Don't use it. It's so bad.
I tend to access podcasts through YouTube, which wasn't even designed for that. So
yeah, and even that's better. So.
But there you go. Anyway, given our aim was to try and get the Spotify share price up to $400 throughout this podcast, I think maybe we failed and we should call it a day.
Yeah, ignore everything I just said. You should listen to Daniel Ek. That guy knows what he's talking about. Yeah, buy Spotify shares, please. Anyway, as we said, that's the only story we're going to discuss this week because, as you might have noticed, there was quite a lot to say about it. And that's it for this week. We're out of time. That's all we got time for on this edition of Setlist. If you want to read more about anything we've discussed this week, you can find the links. Obviously, not that many links this week, but a couple of links in the show notes for this episode, which you'll find in your podcast player now, even Spotify. And you'll also find them at setlistpodcast.com. Subscribe to the show. You can do that on Spotify if you want, if you must. Rate and review the show. You can't do that on Spotify. Email us. You can't do that on Spotify either. That's not a vertical they've hit yet. setlist@unlimitedmedia.co.uk. Setlist is the music business podcast from CMU. It's presented by Andy Malt and Chris Cook. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com.